Glad you're here. Thank you for tuning in today. I'm Henrik, and this is Red Ice Radio, a beacon of sanity from Northern Europe that is dedicated to dispelling the mythmakers. Our website is redicecreations.com, where you can find a lot more radio shows, news, videos, and analysis. We cover all of the most important topics and all the things you had no idea about, but it's essential to know about in order to understand how we have been lied to. I'm glad you listened to our previous programs and that it sparked you to think and question. I hope you did take the time to watch the documentary as well, and if you haven't, please do it. A few knee jerks there, of course, as usual, boringly predictable, but a lot of people got their eyes widened and realized the enormity of the cover-up and lies concerning World War II. This is truly on a monumental scale, which makes it even so much more difficult for some people to begin to approach, to question the lies surrounding this. Anyway, today we are going to return to our series that we've been doing on all the things you didn't know about Sweden, something we've covered in the last few years on and off. We are going to talk with Jessica Andreasson. She is an immigrant living in Sweden. She married a Swede, and she now lives there with her husband. We are going to talk about her Swedish experience and the culture shock that she went through. We are going to analyze our system of politics and the suicidal culture that the cultural Marxists have managed to create among the Swedish people with social engineering, education, and conditioning. We're going to cover a lot of ground today on the finer nuances of the predicament that the Swede is facing that we haven't really addressed with that many people previously in our series. We'll begin to discuss the schizophrenic binge drinking and how the Swedes are lost in a culture of weekend alcoholism. Stay tuned. Hi, Jessica. Welcome. Thank you for coming on. It's good having you here. Nice talking with you.
Hey, Henrik.
Hello, Jessica. Nice to have you here. I wanted to bring you on because we've been talking a little bit back and forth on Facebook. We've been talking over email. You and Lana, I think, started communicating a while back, actually, about some of the things that you've experienced as a living in Sweden, but coming from a foreign country and everything else. And I wanted to try to get closer, as we've been doing on our series on Sweden, of trying to explain to other people what actually is happening within the country from a lot of different angles and perspectives on a lot of different topics, because the country is going down the drain, and a lot of bad things are happening on multiple fronts. But before we get into all the topics I want to talk about here, Jessica, just tell us a little about when and how you ended up in Sweden, and what kind of, I guess, what you expected and what kind of culture shock that you that you experienced when you came there.
Okay. Well, I first came to Sweden was in 2007. I met a wonderful Swedish guy, and I came to visit, of course, before moving here, like to see how I liked it, and of course I liked it, so we of course applied for my visa, which I had to go back home and wait for it, which took 6 months, and then by the end of the year I came back to Sweden to live. So I've been here about 6.5 years now. And my expectations for Sweden and Swedes were quite high. I've had Swedish friends, I've adored Sweden and the Swedish culture for a very long time before I even met my boyfriend, or now my husband. But I didn't expect some of the culture shocks I was going to have since coming from, you know, the States to Sweden, to Western countries. You figure at least the culture is pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
But, there's sometimes a surprise awakening for that. my honeymoon was pretty much over with Sweden about 2 months after I lived here. I started noticing, I noticed things when I first moved here, but I was a bit in denial before then. So,
what stood out to you the most? I guess.
Okay. I guess I'm going to have to skip over some parts I want to talk about, because the first thing that happened to me when I first got here was, it was in December, and there was Julbord, which my husband's work, and then they went to Julbord, and the spouses were all invited to go. So I thought, oh, great, wonderful, I get to go be in this completely, like, Swedish Christmas smorgasbord thing. Swedish food, traditional food, you know, see their, I guess, their version of Christmas. I just thought, wow, awesome. This is, no newcomer to Sweden could have asked anything better than this. You know, like, just, you know, going in head first into the culture and the people. But I didn't realize is that the hotel that holds the Christmas smorgasbord also at nighttime turns into a nightclub, the local nightclub.
So
I thought it was weird when around like about 10 o'clock, people started coming in and they were quite drunk. And I'm like, where are all these people coming from? And I mean, they're really, really plastered. And about maybe 11 o'clock, it was just drunk people everywhere. And it happened to be at least 30 and overnight. So there was a lot of middle-aged women that I was quite shocked to see that were so, you know, they were like his co-workers' moms and stuff were there. And
yeah,
they were really drunk. The highlight of the night was this mid-40-year-old lady jumping on top of the table and lifting up her skirt and dancing like she was at a titty joint.
Oh, God.
And I was just, my jaw dropped, and I couldn't comprehend what was going on. Like, whoa, what happened here? And that was my introduction to Swedish binge drinking.
Yes, yes. The schizophrenia of Swedish culture. You get a one Swede on the weekdays and the other another kind of Swede on the weekends.
Yes, know? it was quite the yin and yang, Jekyll and Hyde thing going on.
Yeah, exactly.
No one gave me the warning that this would happen. So it was definitely.
They probably thought that's how it is everywhere, right?
Yeah, actually, they were like, oh, you know, because, you know, like women are trying to take men away from other women, you know, even if they've got another, you know, came with somebody, they don't care. And it's like, oh, you know, she's drunk or he's drunk, it's okay, you know, and you're like, wow, all right, they're more beyond drunk and their attitude and their behavior is quite disgusting, but all right. It's definitely something I wasn't aware of, but I know I had other European friends that told me, like, this is way back in the days. They were like, oh, the worst tourist to have is a Swedish drunk tourist. And I was like, oh,
yeah.
Okay. But I didn't comprehend that until I moved here and saw that. And then the first place I lived here was on the main street going into the club and the bars in town. So every weekend, every holiday, around 10 o'clock, the drunks would just start going down the street.
Yeah.
And you're talking like they're already super plastered. So I felt quite not safe because they're peeing in the road.
Yeah.
They're arguing. And then around 2 or 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock in the morning, they're coming home. And you get woken up every holiday or weekend with them yelling and screaming, throwing up, fighting, peeing in the road. So
yeah.
It was quite a surprise. I've never seen anything like that. I mean, I lived in Tokyo. I lived in L.A. and I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it a bigger city or kind of a smaller town?
I live in a little countryside, so
yeah,
I'm just shocked that
exactly.
You know, this happens in Stockholm, not here, but no, it happens in almost every little town that has a bar or a club. So, yeah.
It's the alcoholism is a huge part of the problem, I think, in terms of the degradation of the country. This has become the steam valve. This has become where people take out any kind of frustration, basically, that they've built up in the week. And actually, instead of getting something done about it, and actually getting something creative out of that frustration and anger, this is where they're channeling everything into, and it turns into just this complete kind of party / debauchery alcoholic binge version, which is quite, I think it's one of the biggest plagues on our society currently, actually, to be honest.
Actually, I agree 100% with you on that. Actually, I was going to say that, but luckily you did, because I feel like it's a total split personality during the week.
Yeah, yeah.
There are these very mild, timid sweets that they hardly say anything. You know, they just do their own thing, and then all this, I guess, steam builds up, and they have to release it. And I guess that's their way of doing it. And everybody just excuses it, like, oh, they're just drunk. It's okay. You know, regardless of what they've done, which mean destroying a house, getting into fights, peeing everywhere. It's just excuses they're drunk. And it's definitely something I'm not used to, that a whole society can just not be like, hey, dude, you've got a drinking problem. You know, just knock it off. You know, I've seen everyone from teenagers to like mamas and daddies and grandpas doing it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's quite.
And I know some older, they basically, they realize as well that that type of crowd takes over the streets on the weekend after a certain time. So they don't even, I know people that don't even go out at all. Let's say they don't drink or they're not, you know, into that kind of party mentality. They just end up staying inside and they can't even, you know, they can't even go out and have a nice dinner after, you know, towards 9, 10 o'clock because it's starting getting so bad. It's really, really sad, actually, what has happened.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's definitely quite sad because, like I said, I used to not go outside my door past 10 when I used to live on the main street. Now that I don't live off the main street, I live a little bit more in the hills or whatnot, you know, all that's away from where I live. So I could go out without feeling like I might have to run into some weird drunk person. But it's quite sad, the drinking problem here. Nobody talks about it. Nobody thinks it's wrong. They just laugh and, you know, they're just having a good time.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because it's actually one thing that I've been thinking about as we're doing these shows on Sweden and Scandinavian culture. And obviously, I love the culture and the heritage, no question about that. I think there is a rich, wonderful tradition there that has been overrun partially by the invention, really, and the creation of what became Sweden eventually, if we look at it, that historically. But then at the same time, the slow erosion of the culture and kind of what has been left there. I mean, obviously, we hear stories about, you know, Viking mead parties and everything else, and sure, some part of that might be something that's kind of tapped over into this type of behavior here, but it's taken a role now and a center stage in society where basically people of the supposed to be adults and mature are like adolescents. They're like behaving like teenagers. And again, it's this kind of steam valve event where it's just turned into the weekend party to be able to forget everything you've done. I mean, some people, they get so drunk that they black out. They don't even remember what they did Friday or Saturday night, you know?
Yeah, I've heard many stories, and it's like, you know, like a teenage bragging rights, you know, like, wow, okay, but you're way past that. You got kids and everything, but it doesn't matter.
No.
Another thing, I mean, I do believe, of course, the Vikings, they like their mead and ale and whatnot, but I don't know if, I mean, they never probably had someone telling them when they could buy and not buy their alcohol, like the good old Systembolaget
exactly.
Here. I don't think many people realize that Sweden's government doesn't trust the people to buy beer or alcohol. They tell them when they can buy it. It's like a limited time from like 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. every day. And I think Sundays they might be closed or open.
They're closed altogether. Yeah.
And, you know, it was a shock because when I first moved here, there was still a few of those really old style Systembolaget where you walk in and there's a counter with the people working. And, of course, on the sides are these little glass displays with beer and wine in it. And the people go and look, and they go up to the lady and say, hey, I want this and this and this. And then she or he runs to the back, picks up their alcohol, and brings it back to them. Like total Soviet Russia style.
Yep, I remember those. Yep.
You know, and I was like, okay, do they have, like, a, you know, alcohol ration card to give out, too, when they're doing this? Because it was so, I couldn't believe that that kind of a system still existed. At that, like 7 years ago. Now it's gone, but it's quite surprising.
But it's still kind of, it's still the same idea, though, really. It's just that, you get to look at it yourself and put it in the cart, you know?
Yeah, and they still
before you walk up to the register.
Tax you to death for it. And,
And
it's
sure.
So sad because I know plenty of Swedes, and I think you do too, that have driven all the way down to Germany to buy alcohol.
Yes.
And it's still cheaper driving there for the gas. The ferry, the toll fees, and everything, it still comes out cheaper than buying the alcohol here, which is quite sad.
Yes, it's very sad. I know the reasoning behind it, that it actually has a historical problem at the root of it, specifically in the 17 and 1800s, yeah. there was such an incredible drinking problem in Sweden that actually a lot of people were they drank themselves to death. They basically it was such a plague on society that the state decided to do something about it. But obviously, this is not going towards the root of the problem. But it's interesting to me, Jessica, too, because I mean, obviously, we hear about how certain people suffer under alcoholism, and some people are it plagues them more. We've been told, like the Native Americans and things like that. But I think it's across the board. If we look at the Swedish issue here too, it's evidence to me. If we look at the 17 and 1800s, that everyone suffers under the consumption of alcohol that has been brought into the culture in this way. And I can't help to think that it's been part of the of a long-standing control mechanism to subjugate people and put them under control, basically. I don't know, maybe I'm going too far there.
I think so. I mean, it's a great tool to keep them drunk and happy, and also when they're drunk, they cause a lot of problems too, like here a lot of fights down in the center of town where the bars and clubs are, not every weekend, but, they...
Almost, yeah.
Yeah, nowadays actually it's getting bad, like rapes and stuff. So things do happen, and you're just like, wow, in this small little town, so much crap happens. It's quite sad. And it's all from alcohol. And I think it's funny here because, I guess I'll bring it up. I come from California, and there, it's like everybody does marijuana, like literally. But here, if you bring up the word marijuana, everyone looks at you like you're the devil. even if it's about medical marijuana, because I'm like, Sweden should do medical marijuana. And they're like, no. But when I was in Spain, I did a line of coke when I was there. Okay, that's awesome. Okay, then you're against medical marijuana. That's good to hear.
Well, they've been state, I remember the programming actually back in school about cannabis and how incredibly dangerous this was. And this double standard here, of course, again, not pointing towards that people spend all their savings and means and resources on alcohol almost at this stage. They spend all their money to go out and drink. And most people have remembered too, they're actually drunk before they get to the bar because it's so expensive with the drinks, but nonetheless, that's cannabis, anti-cannabis kind of state programming of marijuana has been very strong. And again, it's obvious that it's worked very well.
It's definitely worked very well where they won't even consider it for medical purposes, like, hey, maybe this could help with other problems and pain killing instead of big old pharma coming in and just taking whatever they give us. But that's another story of itself.
Yeah. 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 But it's a pretty tough nut to crack. I think we have to have people start to think about this and get a different hobby, right? They need to realize that if they continue to spend all their means, resources, time, and effort of just working all the time and then basically just being able to afford to drink on your pastime and that's your kind of your entertainment, if you will, that's going to it's going to lead to the continuation of the destruction of the society that has been slated and planned for the Swedish people,
Yeah, actually I was thinking, another funny thing is, a lot of people that we know, they usually tend to make fun of my husband because he doesn't get plastered drunk like everybody else when we're hanging out or a family get together or wherever we're at and everybody's drinking. He tends to not do that, and it's kind of like, oh, you're just a pansy, ha, 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 ha.
Right.
And him and I are more like, you guys just can't handle your alcohol. You guys have drinking issues. But, they don't see it that way. They see it as like, oh, you're just being a pansy because I don't drink. So they just think, what's wrong with you? Well, I just don't. Why am I going to waste my money on something I don't like? But they can't seem to comprehend that not everybody wants to get plastered if they have a glass of wine or something. But
yeah. Do you think that this is kind of been... It's a replacement for the lack of social kind of interaction. There's a kind of a hyper individualization within the society that has occurred. Now, I believe, Jessica, all these are fairly recent phenomena. It's not something that's part of the cultural makeup, although you may like to believe that. Oh, it's just how it is, right? But I think it's something that's been imposed fairly late in the process, and it's not something that It's not how people used to be. If we go back, I don't know, 300, 400, 500 years or something like that. It's and I would consider that fairly recent, considering the long history here we're talking about. But it's the social kind of aspect is so it's people are so kind of atomized, they're so secluded in their own little bubble that the drinking issue has become what it has become because that's a time and a way that people actually just can talk with each other. It's the one part of the time where people won't look at you crazy if you spark up a conversation if you're drunk. You know what I mean?
Actually, it's quite funny because if you meet a Swede at a party or social gathering where there's alcohol involved, the first 30 minutes to an hour can be really awkward. Nobody's talking to each other. Nobody's looking at each other. It's like the most awkward get-together you could ever be at. And then once the alcohol starts flowing, all of a sudden everybody's like your best friend. Oh, how are you? How is it going? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, it's like, wow, they're so social. And then it gets a little bit past that as a later night goes on and more alcohol gets involved. And they get to the point of, oh, wow, they're quite annoying and really bad drunks. And then if you happen to meet them the next day or some other time and you say hi to them, they'll look at you like you're a complete stranger. Like, what? Why are you even speaking to me? Like, oh, okay, never mind. You know, it's quite strange, I have to say. I have to go back on what you were saying about this wasn't always this way in Sweden. I do believe, just from watching the people, this is something that that their government has definitely helped create with this.
Yes, yes.
Socialism, collectivism, like the more control the government got, the more control the people gave to it, and they were like, hey, you know, cool, we got government daycare. You know, if 1 year old, we put our babies in there, it's taken care of, cool, we don't have to worry about it. And it's kind of made them, you know, become more and more dependent on the government so they could kind of give up the responsibility, you know.
Yeah.
It's gotten to the point where, you know, moms are willing to not even do the minimum 6 month like recommended breastfeeding. I've known a couple of girls who have stopped before 5 months because they either wanted to lose weight or go horseback riding or some other reason that they said breastfeeding was in their way.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. And I was like, wow, I didn't say it to them because they just, you know, were like, yeah, duh, you know, I'm going to go do my thing. And I was just quite shocked because if they say their baby's the first, why would they even consider stopping the recommended, you know, time for breastfeeding their kids? And
sure.
Even if that meant their babies were having, like, really bad reactions to the formula milk, like, talking, like, weeks of diarrhea, and they're like, oh, they just need to get used to it. It's okay. And I'm just, oh, okay. Wow. It's for me, it's quite shocking, but to them, they see it as their freedom. It is their freedom to do what they want, and it's okay. And I think maybe we've
that's,
given
– That's scary.
Yeah, it is. I think people are starting to get to me where they don't even – care if their kids are reacting properly or not to the new formula they're giving them.
Well, it's like their kids are not their own anyway, right? That's kind of the idea.
Yeah.
It's like there's this whole mechanism in place where something which was built, I believe, still, you know, it was built on a good principle of safety and security. And I mean, I understand that. Who doesn't want to have that, right? But this has gone to such an overdrive that it's to our detriment, and it's now, as we understand in hindsight, we realize that it's by the state, it's for controlled purposes, and I think that, as I've iterated many times before, this is something that they're also seeking to export to other parts of the world because it is such a successful formula for control and handing everything over to the political administrative system that is in place, and it's rooted in collectivism and socialism. But folks, don't let that fool you. There's no like cohesion and camaraderie within this, as you would think it would occur within a system like this. It's quite the opposite. This is now turned into kind of an empty corporate kind of philosophy and atheistic scientific kind of where there's no reasoning or purpose. Relativity is you know, is everything that exists pretty much. And God, I mean, I don't know how to turn this around. I don't know why people are not seeing it and waking up and trying to break out of it, Jessica. I just don't know what to do, you know.
Well, I think actually a lot of people do want to break out of it because it's easy. I mean, they don't have any responsibilities. They don't have to be responsible for anything. I mean, the culture literally here is nobody is responsible for anything. They just it's to the point where, you know, there could be two big elephants in a room and nobody will say anything about it. And it includes, if someone has a problem or issue with the way another person is behaving in the room, you know, because you get this diva in the room that wants to, you know, I guess most of the Swedes are quiet, but once in a while you get this person that's really loud and very opinionated, and then they tend to just really dictate what's going on around the whole room. And nobody will say anything to this person at all. And, you know, they'll speak in circles and go around the bush. Nobody speaks directly. And I think because nobody wants any responsibility, like, hey, you know, knock it off. You're being such a diva.
Well, they don't know how to deal with it. They've never that's the very key to the upbringing and the system of why it's so important for them to take care of the kids and the children and bring up in that kind of mentality, because that results in complete authority think. Basically, you have a concept where you constantly seek for the authority so that you can tell them possibly or what to do or alert to them so that the professional can come into the situation and do something about it. What I'm saying is that they're not capable of dealing with it because they've never dealt with a situation like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so, because they've never had to really take charge. You know, everybody and everything's planned out for them and done for them that, you know, most Swedes I knew, they didn't even think about retirement, you know, plans or money or having insurance on the side. You know, they thought I was insane. And I'm like, oh, you can't just trust that you're going to have your pension money when you retire, because they're having problems with it now. By the time we get there, there's probably going to be nothing left. Look at America.
No.
You know?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And they're like, no, not possible. But now a lot of people I know, they're starting to sign up for, you know, private insurance for, you know, in case something happens, a rainy day, they're not going to just have to depend on the government welfare, because it's getting smaller these days. So
we have Obamacare already, folks, and now people are going to get the private insurance. That's kind of pretty much the situation we're in right now.
Yeah, I mean, well, this is insurance for health. This is life insurance. This is house insurance. I mean, because the government isn't going to take care of you the way you think they are when you get to that point. And, you know, every year they keep cutting the benefits. You keep cutting the benefits with taxes on everything else keep going up. And
exactly. Yeah, that's it.
You know, and I think they're sort of starting to see it, since you do see people trying to think of, huh, maybe we need to start having our own, you know, retirement fund locked away somewhere else. We just can't depend that the government's just going to, here's your Social Security, here you go. Because there's probably not going to be anything left by our age when we get there. And plus, they also want to keep raising the age limit, too, so I don't think there's going to actually be a retirement age when we get there.
Right, exactly. Well, this is going to lead to people, as you say, just continuing to pay also, though, for it, and then not getting anything for it, and then ending up taking the private insurance on the side. What people need to do here is, of course, to protest the taxes and say, we're not going to pay anymore because we're not getting anything for it, you know, but that's another one of these issues where there was a system that was for the people. If there are any positive aspects about socialism, I would say that would be it then. That, okay, there is a kind of a cohesion there in terms of there is a safety network, and yes, it used to be, you know, kind of frowned upon if you were on welfare and things like that, so people stayed out of that as much as possible. That I'd say is not the case, you know, today perhaps, but we're moving away now from all those things that were about, you know, the Swedish people and taking care of each other and everything, and we're going into this kind of complete, just a market-driven version of it, and necessarily that's not a bad thing if we have good services in place and whatnot, but I guess what I'm getting at is the few aspects that might have been positive that was about and for the Swedish people are now, you know, disappearing, but we're continuing to pay for it. That's what's sad about it.
Actually, there is nothing positive about Swedish healthcare.
Not today, exactly. It was a long time ago since there was something positive about that.
I cannot, from personal experience, I cannot say anything positive about it.
No.
I've had several incidences with them that you know, yeah, it's just made me lose complete faith in the whole government insurance thing, because you're not allowed to opt out of paying your taxes for it. You're forced to pay for a service that you will be lucky to see, or you have to wait years to get it.
Yeah.
And usually when you have to even make an appointment to even go to the doctors, there's always this, like, dictatorial nurse that you have to call and go through, and she or he decides whether it's worth going to the doctors or not. And, I mean, you could be, like, bleeding from your neck, and they're like, well, just put a Band-Aid to it and lay it down, and if it stops bleeding, you're fine. You don't need to come in. You know, they don't want you even going into the ER. I had a friend, her baby was really sick, and they were like, oh, no, we don't take babies under 1 year old, or over 1 year old. They have to be, like, two or something. But her baby was so sick, she went in. They were like, oh, who told you that? She's like, the operator told me not to come in, but I couldn't just watch my kid throwing up to death. Like, you know, he was really high fever, really sick. I think he had been to Kekuk, the throw-up sickness.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, she went anyways without listening, and thank God she went, because the nurse operator was completely wrong. They just didn't want her coming in. So
it's like, yeah, you're a burden on the system. We don't want you here. It costs money. Just go away and die somewhere else. Okay?
Exactly. Yeah. They don't want to help you. I've personally had some incidents. It took 2 years. I kept going in. I was having really bad pain. And I kept going in, and they would just give me, here's an antibiotic, get out of my face, go. And my husband thought it must have been a language barrier, because getting so frustrated, because they didn't want to hear anything. You know, I wanted, you know, do an ultrasound, do an x-ray, see, something's wrong with me. But they didn't want to do any of it. And finally, my husband came with me, and he was there, and he was like, oh, there's no language barrier. Your Swedish is, you know, really good enough to communicate, and her English is really well, too. So we had no problems communicating. Mm-hmm. She just didn't want to help, and she didn't care.
Yeah.
He basically sent me out the door. And it got so bad, I went back home to Tokyo to see the doctors there, and they figured out what was wrong with me within 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, it was horrible. And then I've had some other experiences, which is, it could be a whole other show on itself. But
yeah.
In the end, my husband this year, he had a work injury. And he ended up going to the local vårdcentral, which is like the health clinic, I think you call it, health clinic.
You're right, yeah.
And
yeah.
He was there, and at first they didn't want to see him. But I told him to get in there anyways and go. And he did, and the doctor was like, oh, okay, here's half a week off of work, you're fine. And I was like, no, you fell like over 2 meters, you know, at work. I think you need to see the doctor, because he couldn't even walk properly. And then finally, I guess through work, he had a private insurance. And so they, you know, he called them, and within 2 days, he had an appointment in Göteborg, and which is Gothenburg, sorry. And
yeah, no worries.
They, boom, within there, they're like, okay, you've got some serious injuries from work. You actually need to get your x-rays done, but if you want, you could go and wait, or you could book a time so you could have it, you know, come in without waiting a couple hours. So we decided to just book it, you know, for the next day and come back. And immediately the x-rays were all done. They figured out what's wrong, and they sent him to some orthopedic specialist to get some special lining for his shoes, because his feet were so damaged. And it was just no questions, no waiting. Everything was done within like a week.
Yeah,
and
we
were just so shocked, like, wow, what a big difference, you know?
Yeah.
And so with that, we decided to add me to the private insurance, because we got tired of getting the runaround with our local, you know, hospitals here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
God, I mean, this is, and again, just people have to remember, this is, this system is being promoted around the world, you know, as being this great thing. Folks, and this is what other countries are now aspiring to. It's killing people, really. That's what it's about. I mean, you're paying for it, and then if something actually happens to you, if it's severe enough, you might just die. You might not be able to get help before it's you know, bad enough, basically.
Actually, they want you to die. There is a local lady here that had cancer. I don't know what's happened to her, but it was last year the government refused to pay for her treatment or see any more doctors. So she was going to Finland to go get treatment done herself, but then, you know, she couldn't afford it anymore by herself, and the government still refused to help her. And she worked for like 30 years and pay taxes. And they're like, nope, sorry, there's nothing we could do for you because you're too far in advance in cancer now. So basically, I don't know what happened. The news hasn't covered about what's happened to her. And they just kind of gone silent about her. But it's kind of sad because here's someone that worked hard, paid for it, and they trust the system. And the system said, you know what, too bad.
Yeah.
You know, and I actually know another lady. I actually ran into her husband the other day because I was actually wondering what happened to her. And she was supposed to get surgery about 2 years ago. And last time I saw her was beginning of the year, and she was had surgery time, but they had to rebook her surgery because it took so long since they'd last had her x-rays and her MRI scan that she had to rebook those again so they could have a new one and then rebook her operation. And today, she's still waiting for her operation. They're hoping it might be sometime in August. So that's been like a two-year process for this operation. She never told me what exactly it was for, but that's what your so-called free government health care does for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And, and then on top of that, people just think about what's going on in the country now as well, where we're just basically bringing in so many immigrants that we can't even provide for ourselves or those immigrants that actually are coming in. The unemployment among the youth is basically at such a bad level that people don't know what to do. There's nothing there. And, I mean, the insanity of these people, of the disservice that this is doing to everybody, it's just insane. I mean, I just discovered the other day that Sweden and Norway was among the top 10 development assistance donors to Africa, and they're paying – this was just in 1 year – there was actually The Economist magazine that detailed the input and output of new investment out of Africa, and it turns out just in 2012 alone, Sweden was number 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 on that list, and they're paying over $1 billion for this. Norway is number 10 on that list. And these are countries among, like, United States, France, Britain, you know, Germany, Japan, Canada, like huge countries, you know, big countries with a lot of people in it. And Sweden and Norway end up on this list. And there's nowhere on the return investments of this. They list those who actually get more in return as well. Sweden is not there. They're bankrupting our countries, people. They're doing this intentionally to destroy our culture and to destroy our people. I can't come to any other conclusion, Jessica.
Well, it's actually quite sad when you bring it up and think about it. I know here there's been some Red Cross guys that were some top Red Cross guys that got caught scamming the money from the donations that people were sending to Africa. They actually like skimmed quite a lot.
That happens all the time in Sweden. SIDA, Röda Korset, Red Cross, you know, all these organizations. I remember hearing stories like 2-3 times every year about this kind of activity.
Yeah, it's quite commonplace, and it's quite sad that, you know, the developed countries are sending so much money down there. I mean, especially if you look at the exchange rate for the money value down there versus up here. I mean, one crown or $1 down there is worth a lot more than it is up here, but yet it's like we haven't really done anything down there to really help them. I mean, I think the people down there are still suffering, and it makes you wonder, what are we doing then with that money? What's going on?
Yeah.
What is that money being spent for, since we haven't actually done anything great for these people yet?
Yeah.
You know, and speaking of mass immigration and lack of jobs, youth unemployment and immigrant unemployment is really high in actually all Nordic countries and in Sweden.
Yeah.
And yet they keep saying, oh, you know, there's a couple of people that I've heard them say, there's enough jobs, there's enough place, there's enough resources, we could take in everybody. But it doesn't take a math genius or a scientist to figure out that's just not, it's not possible. I mean, we can't even take care of the people we have today. We're sending them out to Norway. We send them to Greece, Spain, Germany to go get jobs, because we don't have jobs for them. There's not enough housing. We're having housing shortages. And people are literally in queue for like 10 years in some places or more just to get an apartment.
Yep. And that's right.
Where, you know, nobody's building anything because it's too expensive to build anything. And it takes forever to go through the government offices to even get a permit to build a house. I've known a couple people that they wanted to build a house near Gothenburg, and it took them over a year just to even get the license or proper document. Mm-hmm. They just said, you know what?
Oh, yeah.
Forget this. This is taking too long. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
You know, it became such a headache for them. So you have to think, where are these people coming up with that, you know, we can take in everybody, but we can't even help the people here. The immigrants would come and bring it in. We want to help them, but it's like, hello, welcome to the country, next. And these people are just kind of left there, you know?
Yeah.
Like, now you're part of the group, and, yeah, welcome to the country. And I don't think they're doing a service to anybody doing the way they're doing
it. No. Many of these people, they end up being on welfare their entire lives. Education is poor. There's language barriers. And of course, now we're in this situation where, you're not even, like, you're not even supposed to integrate this. That's like just a big joke now. You know, it's like, no. Just, you know, keep your own language. Keep your own. It's all fine. Just be here, but have your own, you know, customs and country and hang out with your own people, but just inside our country. You know, it's just, it's insanity. And it's to a point where it's getting so bad that, I think we're going to see some interesting political activities, not only in Sweden, but actually all over Europe due to this. And frankly, I understand it. Something's got to give, right?
Yeah. There's so much you could talk about. I mean, it's such a taboo topic that we're talking about. Even the Danes made a radio show to talk about Swedish taboo subjects, and it's actually a guy that you had on your radio show called Mikael Jelving.
Yeah, that's right.
He's actually hosting the show for Sweden, that's in Denmark,
yes.
Talking about taboo subjects in Sweden. It's such, I guess, a big joke to them over there that we can't
talk about
immigration here.
No. And
I wouldn't be surprised if somebody after this radio show comes knocking at my door calling me a bunch of nasty names, because I think we could do a much better job than what we're doing right now.
Exactly. That's just it. Like, try to, never see it, betterment and trying to improve things, that's evil now, right? That's being, you think you're better than everyone kind of thing. You know, we're celebrating mediocrity. We're celebrating the lowest of the low, and in fact, we want to just kind of spread that all over Sweden. That's kind of the goal here. And the more and the worse it gets, the better off we are. That seems to be the logic here, you know.
I don't even know what to say. It's like some of the logic you hear from people, and even from the TV and the politicians, it just doesn't add up. They say one thing, and the next day they're saying another thing, but you cannot put one and one together to make a whole picture, because if you do, you're a hateful person, you're a racist, you're a neo-Nazi, whatever they can name you as that.
Mm-hmm.
They will, and no, it's just simple facts. It's just the simple news that came out, or simple facts that came out, but no, you guys are twisting it to, you know, pursue your angle or your needs, and it's like, no, it's not. It is a shortage of jobs and a shortage of housing. It's not something made up. It's very real, and you can't hide it. Everybody, if you go walk around, you know, you'll find housing shortage, and yeah, people wanting to find jobs would be a big thing here.
Well, reality is racist, right? That's just how it is.
Yeah, actually, that's one of the biggest things you always hear here is, like, if they don't agree with you, or if you don't agree with their thinking style, you're the first word that comes out is racist.
Yeah,
and
Nazi.
You're kind of like, wait, hold it. Have you looked at who I am? I'm not a Swede. I'm a foreigner. I'm a foreigner of color, in a foreign person of color. I'm a woman. So I'm actually quite a lot of minorities in their group, but still it doesn't matter because, oh, well, you came from a privileged country. You don't count. Oh.
That trumps everything, yeah.
I was like, I'm sorry. I didn't know my opinions don't count, even though I actually fit in that category what they're talking about. But, nope, sorry. I came from a privileged background because I came from a certain country or another, and I don't get to voice my opinion, and I think, hey, wait, what's going on here? You know, it's actually quite crazy because I wanted to bring about something with the mass immigration. I don't know if you've heard about a guy named Bert Karlsson.
Oh, yeah, sure, of course.
Yeah, he's a total douche. If you go to, like, Hövde or Jötunne or Skara, they do not like this guy. He's asked for government assistance to build these like little parks and things, theme parks and stuff. And he got money from them to build it, and it totally flopped. And he's like, okay, too bad. And he's not a popular guy from what I've heard from that area. But he was on the news recently for actually making a lot of money from the refugee immigration industry. He provides housing for immigrants and refugees, and he earns 300 crowns per person per day from them. And And supposedly, according to the news article, he's making 40% profit for the money he gets from the migration market, which is the migration department. So he's profiting 40% of whatever he gets from it. And supposedly the housing he provides is such horrible condition. It's like bed bugs.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
So they've got like bed bug infestations, toilets aren't working, like the whole place is just a chaotic, horrible place to stay at. And the government doesn't care he's doing this, and he's just totally making profit, and nobody says anything. And it's like, shouldn't this be illegal that he's using the taxpayers' money like this? He's
mm-hmm.
not doing
yeah.
a service to anybody. You know,
You're absolutely right when you say it's an immigration industry. That there's so much tax money that's being poured into this that actually a lot of people have developed this into a millionaire, you know, making business venture basically. And there are people who have owned a little bit of realty. I know people who like owns even camping grounds. They're shipping in people, folks, and putting them in camping, you know, place, like trailers and stuff like that. And these people who own the grounds, or they own a couple of these, you know, trailers or stuff like that, they end up making a lot of money. I heard about the lawyers in itself, that there's so many lawyers that are making money because they are assigned by the state to take care of an incoming asylum seeker or an immigrant's hearings and stuff like that. And, I mean, this is just out of control. This is insanity, people.
Yeah, I totally agree. But you can say these things, because if you say it again, you're a very hateful person. You don't care about any other human but yourself. But which is wrong. I feel like I do care about everybody. That's why I want to say, hey, what we're doing is wrong. We're not helping anybody with the way we're doing stuff. It feels like there's just a bunch of inner circle people that are totally profiting from this whole thing. And they don't care about anybody on the outcome of what happens to them. You know, they're just...
And it's a bigger plot above that too, Jessica. It's not only about the erosion of Swedish identity and everything else. This has to do with replacement level migration. It's an onslaught on Swedish culture, the Swedish people, and everything that this has. I mean, 4 or 5 generations, maybe even sooner down the line, if the numbers keep up, if they keep on bringing in this amount of people, if we continue to pay for them and to fork out for all these government expenses and everything else, we'll be a minority in our own country in like 5, 6 generations from now, no doubt.
Actually, it's quite interesting that you mentioned that. Since I've moved here to now, the amounts of people who have immigrant background, including myself, of course, has risen 5% in like the last 6 years or 6.5 years.
It's an insane spike in that curve. I've seen it.
Spike for such a small country. I mean, it's really, you have to think, this isn't America, this isn't Canada, this isn't, you know, Russia or some big popular Germany. You know, this is about 9 million people, and like just in that short time, the percent has risen that high. And a lot of these people actually I've met, and some people, like, you know, they don't care to learn the language, sadly. I've known people that were in the same class as I was when I was learning Swedish, that they were there for 7 years or so, and they just didn't really care to, like, you know, I guess embrace themselves in the culture where I came. And I just wanted to be part of Sweden. I wanted to learn the language. I could see what's going on. Like, I wanted to laugh at the jokes, too, on TV or, in, you know, when we're hanging out. I wanted to learn and embrace it. And I think it's sad that you do see people that – not everybody's like this, of course. I've met wonderful people that learned, picked up the language fast. They tried getting jobs. and I knew plenty of smart people, but the thing is there's no jobs. You could come with a doctor's degree, no matter what country. It could be America. It could be Germany, Hungary. It could be Netherlands. It could be China, wherever it is. You could come with a degree or a doctorate, and you still can't find a job here. I've known people that had to re-educate themselves here and either, you know, re-educate and get a job here with that new degree, or they've had to take a house cleaning job with a doctorate. Because there's just no jobs for them.
No. It's there's a number of reasons for this. It's, first of all, too expensive to employ. The insurance fees for employers, everything people that's been brought on by our longstanding socialist system that really haven't gone out the window is partially responsible for this, and highly responsible for it. And then at the same time, you also have a situation, for example, where it's practically impossible to fire people once you employ them. The unions have an iron grip on basically this situation, and they've taken over. And that's why I think also a lot of the people who potentially would dare to take a risk, I guess, to actually employ, let's say, an immigrant instead of one who's well versed in the culture and speaks the language well. They know what kind of, to a certain extent, what they're going to get. They don't dare to break out of that mole, if you will. Also, I recognize that's part of it, but what is the reason for that, people? There's a situation where you basically, where you get someone in among your workforce, you have to know that this is a person that's going to absolutely work 100%. You don't dare to take any risks or chances here, because if you do, the procedure you have to go through and the way of, you can't fire them. That's what I'm saying. It's the whole system is built on such a way that it's making itself a complete disservice. And if there isn't a kind of a breaking out of this bureaucracy, the administrative insanity that's going on right now, this is just going to tumble down into the tubes, people, and it's going to go down the drain, you know?
I completely agree. I mean, I've known, some people at, whatever companies or people I know that they wanted to let go because these people came in late all the time, didn't do anything at work, didn't want to do anything at work. And it was like impossible for them to literally fire these people. And I was shocked. Like, in America, you get a couple warnings, you're out the door.
Yeah, here, exactly. That's how it should be.
You could get 100 warnings and you're pretty much secure unless you like literally steal money from the job. You won't get fired. I know there's a lady at the head of Västra Götaland's gun licensing lady.
Ooh.
Yeah, she's been in the news quite a lot, and she's had so many complaints against her. And we are one of the biggest regions in Sweden, and we are also one of the slowest in issuing gun licenses because she's actually an anti-gun person, and I can't remember her name. But it's like instead of taking 1 or 2 months, it's taking 5 or 6 months for renewals. For people who are hunting license renewals, and there's been so many complaints against her for the years, and she's not getting replaced, and I don't think she ever will.
Oh my gosh! Well, people, we need to take the country back. You need to take your responsibility. You need to stop your fucking binge drinking on the weekends and get your head straight and realize what is happening. If you care at all, if you have an ounce if you care at all about what is happening and how this is going to destroy your country. I mean, I feel some people they're not even, when you start talking about this, well, this is the country of your ancestors. You know, your family built up this country. They were responsible of even getting you in a place where all this, security and safety was even possible. They worked and they toiled with blood, sweat, and tears. They fought for the territory. They died. They gave you your life. You are part of them. Their genetics. They wanted you to have something that you could keep and hold. And now we're just letting it all drain and slip away. And some people are not even. If you start talking like this, they just like look at you like, what are you talking about? That's racist. Do you believe in ancestors? Oh, that's racist. It's such an insane situation that I'm struggling to. I mean, I know that there's an awakening, Jessica, though, going on. The more and more people are, the worse it gets to a certain extent, the better it is for this cause, because people are, it's getting so absurd that they're waking up, but there is still the majority, a large part of the population, the Swedish population, are completely asleep. They do not want to look at this. They don't have the mental capacity to even look at it. Well, they're not stupid. It's not that, but it's just that they're psychologically crippled, and it goes back to the responsibility issue that we've mentioned before, that it's like they're not capable of realizing that they have, that they can make decisions and run things and take control of their life and do all these things, you know. So if we are to turn this around, you know, and I as I'm talking with you, I feel that you're concerned about this too, Jessica, even as an immigrant, even if you don't have that, you know, drive that I talked about, but you might have children one day, etc. There is a reasoning behind that you might want to see the country, you know, succeed anyway. But I feel we have a huge task ahead of us to wake people up and to get them to realize, to stop this absolutely suicidal, kind of weird, altruistic, pathological, you know, path that we are on, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not Swedish, but obviously I love Sweden. I've married a Swede. I live in Sweden. To me, I do love Sweden. I love the Swedes so much that I'm willing to come on the radio show and talk about how I feel for it, like that I know it can do better than what it's doing right now. I know there's so much more potential, but people, if you try to speak to them, they're like, well, we have it so great here. What's the big deal? We're not like America or blah, 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 blah. We're not like there. We've got it great here. And it's like, you don't see your government completely controls everything. And you guys have no say. They just basically, they don't even care what to listen to what people say. And if people say something that you're wrong, you're a hateful person, you're wrong, you know, you don't need to be here talking to us. And I think everyone, no matter what country they live in or who they are, if you're in a place you're living in and you care about that place, you should stand up and speak up. You should stand up and speak up for what's right. And you should try to talk to people. It's hard to do it, but try to, you know, talk to people to be like, hey, you know, we shouldn't be taking this crap anymore. We should want better for our future, you know, our future. Yeah. For our future children. We should leave something great to leave behind, not something that's going to end up being like, I don't even know, some super more police state than it already is, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Jessica, let's take a little break here between the segments. There's much more I want to talk with you about. We need to detail a bit more in terms of, you know, the gender insanity in Sweden, state feminism. We have a couple of issues that pertains to the psychological makeup of Sweden when it comes to Jantelagen, the Jantelag, and how envy is a huge part of this, and success. There's a kind of a frowning on those who try to break out of this system or achieve higher. Just another kind of control mechanism, I feel, of the government and the state, really, that was imposed probably a couple of hundred years ago, in terms of that if you're trying to kind of better yourself, it's something that's actually resented, which is a huge you know, kind of problem in this tactic of trying to achieve something better, you know. But so there's a lot more things we want to discuss and talk about, and I guess we don't really have a website to give out here, Jessica, at the end of the first segment. You're just kind of a private person living in Sweden. You're seeing the insanity that's going on and speaking out about that. We'll take a short break and we'll return and talk more in the second, okay? And we return with the second hour after a short break. We'll pick up talking more about the history of Sweden. Jessica has been very interested in the culture and has done more reading about that than most Swedes. We discuss the Viking spirit and how to attain strong, independent people that have loyalty to their own people and how to awaken the warrior. We discuss the rape epidemic in Sweden, state feminism, the reversal of the gender roles, and also Jessica shares with us how many times she has encountered resistance and opposition for basically just bringing attention to facts and statistics. She has been called a racist and a Nazi for pointing out the differences between people. The programming of the Swedish people is really like nothing else, like nothing you've seen. We discuss how to awaken the slaves and bring in some more fighting spirit into the people. We continue for another hour and a half with Jessica, so much more is coming up. Go to redicemembers.com and sign up for a membership to continue to listen to the second part and, of course, all our previous programs. Take a look around in our archives. We have almost 900 programs on all kinds of topics. And yes, it is better than any Hollywood movie, folks. So if you enjoy what we do, support us and not your propaganda masters. Help us to continue to bring you the real story and take that plunge into reality as opposed to the constructed illusion of those who seek to put you in a reality bubble. By the way, we have upcoming Josh Reeves, Björn Nyström, Daniel Updike, Gordon Kennedy, Nora Gadgadas, Kai Murrows, David Everhard, and many more. RedIceMembers.com is the website. We'll see you there. Thank you for listening.